Welcome to Untamed Blossoms, the podcast where we celebrate the untamed journey of womanhood. Here, we tell the stories of incredible women who have embraced their authenticity, inspiring others to do the same.
From entrepreneurs to artists, activists to adventurers, we share triumphs, challenges, and the beauty of self-discovery. These are the stories of women blazing their own trails, breaking free, and blooming unapologetically.
Join us to connect, be inspired, and celebrate the power of women's stories. Together, let's rewrite the rules and embrace our wildness.
Welcome to Untamed Blossoms. I'm your host, Amanda Riley.
And I'm Christy Riley. Welcome, everybody.
This is the first time we didn't have like a 5-minute jib-jab conversation
that we
went right into it. This is crazy.
Must be solstice energy. We're done.
It is toasty.
Warm. Yeah, we're in a heat advisory situation.
Yeah.
We're not supposed to be talking about the weather.
Yeah, but this is wild. Because I feel like
we've been begging for months.
Yes, but this is also what happens in Ohio. It's like cold, shitty, rainy, bam. Heat advisory.
100 degrees.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just so classically.
The good news is I'm hoping we're going to get the boat out this time.
Sounds so fun.
And keep it in for a couple of days and visit it for a few hours a day.
Great. Yeah. Yeah. That's so nice.
That'll be the first one in the season. We're already at the end of June. Sad.
I cannot believe we are almost at the end of June.
It's a sad situation. And all of my children are like,
boat.
We get in the boat. And I was like, except you're correct. It was 40 degrees. At night for most of like half of June.
Yeah.
So the lake was freezing.
So I read this really interesting thing. So I don't know if you saw that they have like officially changed Tornado Alley.
No.
And moved it towards like it's part of Ohio now.
Oh.
So weather patterns have been changing, right? So before, if you remember like being little, like in May, it started getting really hot.
Right.
June hot, July hot, August right. hot, September cold.
Yeah.
Now we're seeing a shift where it's not getting hot until June and it's staying hot through like October.
Right.
Like remember last October, it was like warm for pretty late.
Right.
So
right. We were still able to go to the lake in September.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's some weird, interesting patterns of weather changing.
Global warming. Right.
That is causing the seasons to switch a little bit.
Yeah.
And I do distinctly remember last year being here outside talking to Stan saying, this doesn't feel like fall. Like, I want fall weather, but it's hot still.
Right.
So I think you might have the boat out longer later.
I hope so. I hope we have a longer season. That would be great.
Yeah, totally. We had our solstice event this weekend. So
we did.
Fun.
We tie-dyed.
If you're watching this on
you
YouTube.
You did. You tie-dyed a shirt. I tie-dyed a towel. I didn't think it would be appropriate to wear that today.
Could have.
But I was trying my hand at it.
Have you rinsed it out yet?
No. Today is the day.
I don't know how you can wait. I was fiending for it. I woke up yesterday morning. I was like, yes, it's tie-dye washout day.
It's time.
I was so
excited.
And they all turned out so much better. Tie-dyeing is a skill.
It is definitely an art form. Yes. And you have to be good at it. And Sarah apparently is very good
at it. She's the best at it.
Mm-hmm.
I attempted a lot of different designs last time. They did not turn out so great. They were fine. Let me say that.
You were afraid of the color last time, you said.
I just didn't want to use too much. I was like, this is going to be hideous. Turns out opposite.
You got to use a lot. Yeah.
So this one I'm wearing today was a spiral. I feel like it turned out really well.
It's cute. Yeah.
And I have a very pink one that I really love. And I can't wait to wear that one. Yeah. But
it's adorable. All of them, the video you sent, so cute.
I was like, I did this.
I know.
You know, I get like upset because I'm not very good at art things sometimes.
Oh.
And I was like, but I did this art.
You did.
And I felt so proud of it.
And imagine if you continued to practice it regularly, how good you would get.
It's just very messy.
I think that's the thing. It is very messy. It is very messy. It was very hot.
Very hot.
So we were all sweating and trying to get through it. But
yeah.
It was lovely.
It was.
It was a lovely event.
It was the longest day of the year. So it was just so nice to be out in sunshine till like 9:30.
Watching the sunset here is beautiful. The horsey fire. It's lovely.
Beautiful.
We were going to have a fire. No.
Too hot.
Too hot
for fires.
All of us were like,
I mean, can you imagine a flame on top of that? No way. No. We had like an industrial sized horse fan.
Right.
Trying to cool us off.
Yeah. Moving some air.
I hear and I know and I've seen that you have a new member of the family.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So we did report last time about our tragic news about our sweet doggy, Leroy. We have a new baby, 9-week-old, miniature schnauzer puppy who's bright white, which is very rare for schnauzer puppies. And he's got pretty blue eyes and his name is Willie.
He is so handsome and so little.
He's so cute and so tiny.
He's so tiny.
And he's a menace already. Well, he won't stop biting us. But what we're learning about him is that he's using aggression as communication.
Yeah.
And so when he's super aggressive and biting us, he needs something. He either needs to go outside. He's doing a great job of going outside. And if you take him outside and let him pee or poop, he totally settles down if he's hungry. Like, it is like his way of communicating with us is the menacing. We had to move all the plants. He wants to eat all the plants. He wants to try to kill himself via, you know, all of my plants in the house. So that's a new thing. I've never had really a puppy. So this is new for me.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, is he trying to eat the plants? What is happening? No, spit that out. Spit that out.
Puppies are menaces.
It's like having a baby for sure. Like,
oh, yeah.
You have to be right on him. He is taking every second of all of our time, all the time. If we're out of sight, he's squealing and screaming. So he just absolutely has to be with you.
Yeah.
And in the same room. And
he's with him right now.
Stands on the porch. He brought his laptop out on the porch and is sitting on the floor with him working while the dog is like menacing around him, trying to bite him. And
well, what are you going to do? You know,
he's too cute. He is slowly healing our broken hearts. A little squeal and menace at a time.
Yep.
Yeah, but he's a doll and we all love him. And he went to his first horse show yesterday. Everybody loved him. He was just so, everybody just was like, oh my God, bring me that dog. You know, we knew, people we didn't know. It was great.
Puppy therapy is a real thing.
Real thing. Yeah.
Because it's just, how can you be sad around a puppy?
No.
You can't.
No, yeah. He's really just helping us get over little Leroy. He's got big shoes to fill, but
yeah
he's real adorable. So we're happy to have him.
Yes.
Yeah. It's been good.
Well, our guest today, Tia. Yeah. So excited.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited.
We met her through the mayor of Kahana.
Yep. Lori Jadwin. She's her marketing manager.
Yeah, I believe, communication. Right?
Communication
and marketing. Yeah.
And marketing, yeah.
So really excited to hear about her story and her background and all the different avenues she has been in, which is a decent amount. So
yeah. Stunning young lady. We can't wait to talk to her. She's going to be a great interview.
Totally. All right. Hello, Tia. Welcome to the pod. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Welcome. You were in the background when we interviewed Mayor Jadwin.
Yeah.
I'm making sure that we didn't say anything that would get her in trouble or. So that was, we appreciated that. We appreciated you in the background. Looking point managing back us. There, managing all of us. Yeah. 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 We were happy to meet you. So we're glad that you decided to come on.
I'm so glad to be here and thank you.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about you.
Well, I am, I guess I would say that I'm a communications obsessive.
I like that. Ways,
it's hard to like give it like a professional heading because it's so deeply ingrained in so many aspects of my personal life. But yeah.
Did you like start out going to school for communications or how did you get in this vein? I know it said it's ingrained in you, so you know, were you a kid doing shows to your parents? Like,
that's kind of a funny story, right? I think that I can look back now that I'm older and I see it in so many other places of my life and childhood, which is how I got on this track. But that is definitely not where I started. I went to undergrad for fashion design.
Oh, wow.
So, yes.
Nice.
That was my I just knew I was going to be the next Chanel. And that was my thing. And of course, you know, fashion and communication go hand in hand in so many ways. But at the time I graduated, we kind of had that recession of, you know, happening in 2009. Between that time, it was hard to get jobs. And The companies I wanted to work for were laying people off. And so I thought, hey, I'll get in on the business side of it if I can't get in on the design side right now. And so I went back to school at Franklin University for communications. And I thought I'd become a fashion buyer because I love to shop way more than I like making clothes anyway. Found that out in college. But I took a class called Marketing Technology. And this is like at the very beginning of Facebook. It was kind of just for college students at the time. And Twitter was just making a launch. And I wrote a paper about how social media would become the future of sales and customer service. And the rest was history. I fell in love with it and started a consulting business on social media. And I've been like experimenting with it ever since. There's a lot of business owners, small business owners that let me play around with it. And I kind of did a drunken stumble into the political world.
Like, how did I get here?
Tell us more about that.
That's funny. I've never lost an election, which is something. So
That's awesome.
But it's been interesting. It's been interesting, that whole journey of crossing into that world from fashion design. But I just fell in love with social media. It was my space. So I spent a lot of time, like I would say, I'm probably one of the first social media marketers because it wasn't really something you could study yet. So I spent a lot of time kind of going back and teaching strategies and things that worked and wrote a book about it. And yeah, that's a brief journey for me.
What's the name of the book?
It's called Canceled. So I wrote it in 2020. It's about mastering difficult conversations in a modern world. And a lot of it came from my time of, because, you know, I worked in marketing, all those conversations are measurable, right? So I took a look at the way, all the different ways that we speak, especially in the digital sphere, and the way we process information, and broke that down into marketing segmentation, and then started teaching some of those strategies to help people understand each other a little bit better, to have hard conversations like DEI, like patriotism, like women's issues, you know, those sort of things, help people hear each other better.
There's something interesting I've been seeing. I would love your opinion on this on like TikTok, right? So there will be someone, major influencer, right? They will have so many followers. Everyone loves them. And it's like, one conversation or one wrong move, one wrong video, and the pitchforks are out. I mean, the comment sections are a mess. People are like, do not follow this person. Like, they didn't speak upon, you know, what's happening in, around the country right now, or they didn't speak on this thing that's going on. And of course, we see that with celebrities a lot, but it's just been very interesting to see that shift more towards influencers. So speaking of the book and like how to have these hard conversations, it feels like we're very quick to turn on people. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, man. I would agree with that. That's one of the reasons why I wrote my book the way I did. And beyond even influencers, we see these in so many ways. At the time when I wrote it, I was working for Governor DeWine as his faith-based deputy director of his faith-based Office of Community Initiatives. And I was running into so many different nonprofit leaders, pastors who wanted to serve people who needed help, like help with housing, help with hunger, help with, you know, children in foster care. But because of the difference between like people who tend to be very conservative, who needed to serve them, they didn't know how to connect with them. And so they had a hard time building bridges to provide those services for that reason. And so, you know, they were kind of turning off volunteers at the time, people who wanted to help, but didn't quite know how to plug in, people who needed the help, but didn't know how to feel welcomed or accepted. And they didn't quite know how they were offending people. And so I think that was like that obsession with how to build those bridges with communication is where my book came from, the heart of where it came from. I was just kind of going around trying to train leaders how to listen to people and how to hear what's on their heart, hear what their priorities are, and then also say things in a way that wouldn't be off-putting.
Yeah.
And so I think that there's a lot of obligation on both sides for people to really try to learn and understand where each other's coming from.
Yeah.
You know, not be so quick to to give a judgment, one thing I would like to see come back in style is listening to a person's intentions versus their execution, because it's, I don't think it's the difference. I always say this in language, it's not the difference between good and bad. It's the language between Spanish and French. That's the difference, right? You know, the way that we speak now. And it really does come from our background. It comes from our upbringing. It comes from our own sense of personal identity, our survival instincts, right? It's really hard to change the way someone speaks. So you kind of have to listen for their heart now and be a little more intentional, ask questions before you just write them off. But I really do hope that our society, because social media doesn't have the consequences that we used to have, like when you had to deal with someone in person or maybe you're in the office or you're working with them. On social media, you can just, it's just that quick, you know, you can block. You don't have to be concerned if this person's fixing your food or fixing your car or standing over you with a scalpel. I mean, though we should, you never really know, right? You never really know. So I just think that, you know, we have to work a little bit harder to want to understand each other and do away with a little bit of that chaos.
It's such a detachment from community helping, right? And community, mutual aid, all of those things. Like you would, I don't want to say make an exception, but you would more, you would deeply critically think before saying something to someone that you knew, like what they were going through in life or like if they, you know, their circumstances. And I saw this little interesting thing play out the other day of a creator saying how off put they were by the signs at the rallies.
Yeah.
That were the No Kings rallies and saying, what do they think this is? Like a marathon. They're out here at these funny signs and they're not taking this seriously. Like these messagings aren't serious. And then a woman creator came on and she said, hey, because they were showing signs from like the women's suffrage movement, making parallels towards other movements in history and showing like side by sides, right? And she was like, do you realize that those signs and those people were organized by unions? Do you know unions were systematically crumbled because they benefited people, right? And so when you are criticizing people for making an effort in lieu of perfection and comparing it to something that you're not super aware of, the fact that back then these signs meant something and they were marching somewhere, those were organized marches by unions and signs made by unions so people could come during their lunch breaks or when they had the time to just pick up a sign and go. That's not necessarily where we are right now. So context is so important. And before you start tearing a group of people apart that have the same mission, it's crucial to understand what you're saying and what facts you're throwing up. Because on social media, you could throw anything up there, right? And you can say like, look, we're not doing this the right way. Like this is how it used to be. And it's like, well, take time to understand your history also of how these things were executed.
I agree with that, you know, and of course, not everything has friendly roots, right? You know, we can look and see where some things maybe didn't start off with the best of intentions for humanity as a whole, and then it evolved into becoming something a bit more meaningful. I mean, we see that in some holidays and holy days, right? So we make room for evolution. But I do think that, like I said, we have to make room for people to grow. And that's my greatest concern for us as a culture, you know, as Americans right now, is that I don't think that we're making enough room for growth. We're not building those golden bridges for one another to come across. And we don't realize just how much we need each other. So that's always the concern for me, especially the time I've spent working in crisis communications. You know, some of these organizations that have been like canceled temporarily, for example, they served people, right? I spent quite a bit of time during 2020 with some of the police departments. You know, before I came into the public sector, I'd worked as a consultant in the private sector, and they would need crisis communications. And, you know, they're serving people, and you can't just shut them down, right? Because you still need them to be motivated. You still need them to want to come on, show up and do a good job and serve and protect. And how do we do that if we're creating such a hostile atmosphere for them to do their jobs in? So there's just so much work on both sides of listening and building those relationships and bonds. And I really believe that people have to be taught how to listen without an agenda, number one, and then also how to speak speak the language of the person that you are listening to, and not just necessarily in your own, but you have to be able to pick those things up, right?
How do you give people practical tips? Because I think it's great when we say we have to teach people how to listen. How do you give people real practical step-by-step ways instead of just in their mind, not really hearing people, but ready to launch a defense, right? So they're already contemplating their defense to whatever is being said. They're not truly, how do you teach steps of listening to get your brain, you know, past this divisive state that we're in? Because I feel like we are so divided currently that having conversation means that you have to be on one side or the other. And so it's hard, I think, sometimes to push the pause button of your brain to say, wow, just really listen and try to hear their heart. I love that phrase. Just hear their intention and their heart versus what the details of what they're saying, right? And you're just automatically launching a defense in your mind so that when there's a pause, you're ready to speak again.
Yeah, I think that number one, I try to teach people to keep in mind that just because we're not speaking the same language doesn't necessarily mean that what someone has to say isn't irrelevant, right? And so I give the picture that we are like a 1,000 piece puzzle of a landscape, and some pieces connect and some pieces don't, but we're all a part of the image. And if we want to get the truth, and that's what's important, you know, the whole point of communicating is to figure out what the truth is. If we want to get the truth, you have to allow someone to tell you what their piece is. Am I the grass? Am I the sky? Am I the tree? Right? So we can put that entire image together because we really are one image. And with one piece missing, the image is broken. So if I can get people to buy into that, to say, this is about truth discovery, we're going on a truth journey here. This isn't about agreement, it's about truth. So at least allow someone, give someone the same respect you would want to hear your heart and to hear the truth. You know, that's number one. And if we can get them there, that's important. The second part is, and I think the most important part is to get them to agree to some goals. And if the goal is to be a peacemaker, if I can get them there to say, hey, look, Is that really what we're after here? Are we after peace? Are we willing to go on that journey? And most people are, right? Usually when we are advocating for something, we're passionate and we're maybe defensive. It's because we feel we're unsafe and we want to create a safe environment. But to create a safe environment, you have to give one first. So that's why my content, I try my best to speak to leaders to say you have to be the first one to create the safe space. And you do that by listening. It's one of the highest honors that you can give. Not agreeing, listening, so we can at least get to a path to peace.
Absolutely. I don't know if you saw the clip before, I'm sure you have, where Obama was speaking and someone in the crowd was like shouting and people were like, get him out of here. And Obama was like, no. I appreciate this young man for having the courage to share what he's afraid of. He's afraid right now. And I would like the chance to let him speak about why he's afraid so then I can respond and help him understand that he has nothing to be afraid of. I think, wow, what a powerful technique of bringing people together. It's not to immediately get rid of the person having the emotional response. It's just saying, let me hold that space for you. Let me identify what that basic need is of yours that you feel like is a threat right now so that I can help you understand why it's not a threat.
Absolutely. I think that those are some of the markers of great leaders that, you know, I like to look for when I'm selecting who I'm going to work with, is someone who's not afraid to listen to someone else who may not agree with them in that moment and really hear their heart. Because to your point, you know, when someone is angry or they're upset, they really are afraid. And then you go a little deeper on what is fear. Really, it's just there's something you don't know enough about. And so if you're willing to listen to them, listen to what they're afraid of, then you now have the opportunity, that's my point of giving. Now you can give them a safe space by educating them and informing them. You may not agree, and sometimes it's hard that agreement can't be the goal, but we can at least stop being afraid of one another. That can go a long way. And you also have the opportunity to learn, right? Like if I have that chance to say, okay, you're afraid, let me tell you my position on it, then open it back up for so they can challenge you again. And that's where compromise is built. And we can find those opportunities of building those golden bridges, I like to call them. So I just think that that's really important when it comes to dialogue. And it's hard to find people and especially leaders sometimes who are willing to go on that journey. They really do have to be trained for it. You know, sometimes it's like it's not you just getting up there and saying what you want to say, but having the ability to listen to what other people are going through. That is going to go way further than you just preaching. And I think that's the difference between leaders and advocates.
Out of all the places and, you know, whether it be with people or companies that you worked for, what was the hardest for you personally to step in and kind of turn the ship around, if you will? Like, have you been in any of those messy situations where you're like, wow, this was a really, really difficult environment to go in as a communications expert and help change the course of where this is heading?
Probably the most difficult, I would probably say, that stands out to me is state government. there's much more layers of bureaucracy, which is why like I love working with Mayor Jadwin. She knows how to move things along much faster. State government, it takes a lot of patience. And at the time I was younger and far more outspoken. still very much learning, you know. And then, you know, the entire world was learning at that time too, because like I said, I was there just before COVID hit. I was there 2019 through to 2021. And so there was a lot happening and much going on and much to learn. But here's what I'll say, just a year before, it's so funny how things turned out. A year before, after spending a lot of time listening, we did what I called it, like we called it a faith-based tour. And so we would go regionally into different territories that was kind of divided up by the state of Ohio and listen to all the nonprofit organizations that had initiatives and listen for their challenges. And I am an addictive problem solver. You cannot give me a problem that I probably would not rack my brain of trying to figure it out. So I'm listening to all these leaders. And then we had what we called Faith Fridays, where once a month we would bring people in and we would host listening sessions, because now I'm a marketer by trade. I want data. So we would have them take surveys, and I had a chance to really submit for data. And I did a presentation called Work Smart Ohio about how I thought that working remote could solve a lot of Ohio's problems at the time. This is prior to COVID, mind you, just prior to COVID. I was showing how it could help with infrastructure improvements, how it could help with childcare, and just different issues that were happening. I put together this whole proposal, and and I had all my research, had it all backed up, had all these, you know, met with. I think I built a database of about 3,000 of that, maybe about 500 case studies that participated in those surveys. So I had it all backed up. Like this would be a great solution. I presented it to Governor DeWine's team. You know what they told me? They said the state of Ohio will never support working from home.
Oh, wow. They had no idea what was coming.
Little did they know.
They had no clue.
Fast forward to 2019, and they're frantically looking for Tia's proposal going, where was that she said? How quickly can we get that implemented? Oh, my God. She's a psychic.
What's hilarious is that, you know, had we like prepared, it yeah. wouldn't have been such a crazy crossover, right?
Yeah.
You know, if they were willing to just, you know, see life a little bit differently and they were willing to make those adjustments. So I look back on that now and I'm like, wow, that's phenomenal how that worked out. I called it and put together that whole presentation on it, and I can't wait one day when I can really tell that story the way that I want to, because there's a whole lot more parts that you don't have time for. But I credit that to my education in fashion design. You have to be able to predict trends, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Hopefully.
So that's something that I usually suffer from being ahead of my time. And I'm still trying to learn the art of when to share the data, you know, when it can be received. But I've learned how to trust my instincts, because that was one of the biggest ones that told me, like, hey, this is a gift. You need to.
I think that's one of the hardest things about any person or company you work for, is there is a tight hold on this is how it's always been done.
Yep.
And that is the killer of progress, right? But this is how it's always been done. What do you mean? Like, we don't need that. We've always done it this way. And just because there isn't an issue, a glaring issue, let's say, with how it's always been done, not allowing other ideas to come in and really take a look at it and say, okay, versus my brain going to immediately, no, we've always done it this other way. It's always been fine. Being open to possibility of change, just that hesitation of being open would allow so many more beautiful things to happen. And people like you who can analyze data and say, hey, this is the projection I'm seeing things going. Let's be open to the possibility. Then maybe they wouldn't be ahead of the game when COVID happened, but they could have been a lot closer.
A lot closer. We saw at the program specifically was designed to help businesses who wanted to create a remote solution, you know, be able to access grants or funding to put that together. It wasn't like a mandate. It was just to say, how can we help businesses create these sort of solutions for their workforce? And they're like, yeah, we don't support working from home. I'm like, okay, I got you.
Good, good, good. Yeah, now if half the population probably still work probably in the state of Ohio, at least. I feel like everybody's remote these days.
And the data has supported that workers are more productive, they're happier, work-life balance is better, there's less call-offs. Like, you know, there's been a ton to support that also.
Yeah, 100%. I still have some mixed feelings about it. I'm one of those people that that even though everyone was working from home, as soon as I could get back out there, I did. And it's only because I have a diagnosed anxiety disorder. So I did not want to make things that used to be simple for me hard. So I forced myself to go back. And I think that it's healthy in many ways because I had gained a lot of weight during COVID. I've never been like more than a size 4, and COVID was horrible with slowing me down, and I couldn't even put a gym in my house to work out enough to catch up with my previous lifestyle. As soon as I went back to work, I started teaching adjunct at 2 schools, and it just dropped off, you know. So I still think that at least having a hybrid solution is better. And I still advocate for companies to have at least, you know, some options. You know, flexibility is very important.
Right. Come and go if you need, you know, like I know that my son-in-law worked from home. And as soon as he was able to, he wasn't doing well with it. He really enjoyed and missed the socialization piece of it. And so he really was having a hard time. And so as soon as he was able to do a hybrid of going back a few days and at home a few days, he did. And it was really beneficial for him too. So it's not always for everyone. Yeah.
But having the option and
being flexible.
Also knowing that for some families financially, that could be a lifesaver. I think it's irresponsible not to be flexible in that manner. If they're still able to help the customer, whatever capacity their job function is, right?
Listen, your hot water goes down, your air conditioner goes down, the repair guy's coming from 10 to 2, right? You're like, okay, so now I got to call off work, right? Where you could definitely work from home, be like, listen, boss, man, I'm continuing to work, but I need to be physically at my house to make sure this happens for my family when it's 90 degrees outside and my air conditioner is broken. Like, it's never convenient when they can come.
Right.
Like, can you come in the evening? No, ma'am, we cannot. So, you know, for those reasons, I think it just that alone, being flexible, or having a sick kid that doesn't need a lot of attention but can't go to school or to daycare, and they're up in their bed and you can get up every hour and go check on them real quick, but still have a productive work day, is really beneficial for people. It makes a huge difference. So,
I agree 100%. I mean, it's one of the reasons why, you know, I was at the time so motivated to like start my business, because there were no work from home jobs at that time when I had my daughter, and she had a chronic illness and I had to call off work all the time. I kept getting written up, you know, and I just needed to be at home with her. It didn't make sense to, you know, take her to babysitter and go back to work, you know, come back, pick her up, try to find a head start. Then she's always getting sick from the kids. It's like, I needed to be able to work from home. I needed to. And I just think that it makes a world of difference if you have employers who are willing to be flexible.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how did you make the jump then to starting your own company? Can you tell us a little bit about that and what it took, and maybe some wins and maybe some things that were a struggle?
it was such a shift because I couldn't find a job during the reception because everyone was getting laid off. I was newly married. It was my senior year in college. and then my husband and I had a baby right after. And it was just a really tough time to find work. The only job I could find now out of undergrad was selling cell phones. So I worked in wireless. And I made I think it was $9 an hour at the time, plus commission. And which was such a dream killer from, you know, my dreams of going to New York City and becoming this fashion designer. I'm like $9 an hour. And so when my husband got laid off, my husband at the time got laid off from his job, I had to make up the difference, you know, and I was pregnant, which was a lot to have to take on. And there were so many things wrong. I think this is kind of like the genesis of where a lot of my political interests jumped in and my interest in women, because I had started my job and my husband, like I said, we didn't have health insurance benefits because we didn't know anything about that at the time. We're so young. My gosh, we're in our early 20s. So I had to go my entire pregnancy without health insurance. So when I found out I was pregnant, they said it was pre-existing. So I wouldn't have any coverage until my daughter was born. That's when we would get health insurance coverage. Well, my job at the time, and I won't say who they were, they told me that I could not take a maternity leave. I had 3 days to have my baby and come back to work or I was fired. And I didn't want to lose health insurance. You know, it was horrifying going through pregnancy. Didn't have one doctor, had to see several different doctors at a clinic. And I just didn't want that for my baby. So I fought through. I can't believe that I had the strength at the time to do it. So it was just a horrifying time. And then, like I said, I'm the only income in my house. And I have to give a shout out to my team there, the guys that worked in the retail store with me, because what they would do is they would all go and do sales and things for me because I could barely walk or move. And they just split their commission with me to help get my family over that hump. So it was phenomenal to see how they came together to help me out because, of course, you know, I couldn't get to customers and be all competitive, but they took very good care of me. But I learned a lot about performance-based pay at that time. And I learned a lot about sales and I learned a lot about commission. I learned about how to talk to different people and in different priorities. And so once I hit a point where I now enrolled in graduate school, there's a customer that stayed after work one night and we got trapped. It was like a rainstorm. And I was telling him about the paper that I was writing about social media. And he asked me, hey, would you be willing to come and work for me and try it out? I said, sure. So I worked there for about a year. And at the time, there was no path up because no one knew enough about it. So they asked me and I was just interested in learning. And I needed to make more money still. Like I said, I'm still trying to take care of my family at that time. So he asked me if I'd be willing to consult. So I started taking on other clients and they became my very first client. In the consulting space. I didn't know anything about that. But all of those skills of sales and performance-based pay and everything just really came together at that time. It's amazing what you can produce when you're backed into a corner. But yeah. What definitely came out of me is someone who fought hard to advocate for women and policy initiatives that would support women's health and women's maternal health because of the things that I had gone through. And that's a lot of that is how I got into politics and then government and spun into it from there, just from consulting on campaigns and things for women that I thought would really push us forward.
And that was going to be my question before, was you spoke about, I used to be more outspoken, a previous version of you. Tell us more about that version of you. I'm assuming that is possibly around the same time as all of this. Is that You were very outspoken about that and about your experience, right? And so I feel like we talk about this a lot on the podcast is women have, we do have these evolutions, right? These where yes. We look back at previous versions of us and go, whew, I barely recognize her, you know? Because, you know, as we get older and have more experiences, we do evolve and change. And that's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. But tell us a little bit about that version of you and what you learned from her and what you were willing to let go as you sort of moved into a different phase.
Yeah, I think I'm still very outspoken, but I just have a different approach now. And so the previous version of me has always been, how can I say this? I was not very good at appealing to people's ego. I was just far more of an advocate, far more fiery with my approach to how I would speak up about issues and didn't really think through strategically, you know, beyond talking about it. Now, how do you make a change, right? How do you actually make those transitions? And most of us, you know, we're not always thoroughly informed about the political landscape and how government and politics, you know, how those things are connected and also where they're disconnected. And so when you sit back and you learn enough of it, you learn that there are so many behind the scenes decisions that are made. the backroom deal. I see even the Constitution was a backroom deal, right? Just people that come together and pull together these documents and make decisions for our lives. People you'll never know their names or you don't even know to pay attention to them. So once I had the chance to kind of sit back and see how it all works, I had to decide whether or not, like, do you want to be the advocate that's always highlighting what the problem is? Or do you want to be the leader that can really help to resolve these things and push it across the finish line? And I wanted to learn how to become the leader. And so I spent a great deal of time just going to leadership institutes, going to learning from different leaders as part of my journey of kind of hopping out of entrepreneurship. And then when I had opportunities to kind of sit back and study behind great women, even if I had to take a day job to do it, I did that because the kind of leader I've always been committed to being. That's why, like I said, I took the role as soon as I could to work with Mayor Jadwin. I think she does a phenomenal job. But one thing I notice about all of them is they are, in the women that I work with, the women that I select, they are very honest, they're very direct, and I love that about them, but they are also great listeners and they're very present. And so I appreciate learning how to become that person. I'm still learning. And if you spend enough time, like, the bigger the problem you try to solve, you start to understand why some of that bureaucracy is there when you get to the fallout of things and when you get to the other side of it, because everything has pros and cons. And then you get into government and it's more complex. It's not like this is a good decision, this is a bad decision. It's like this is a terrible thing and this is an awful thing. Right. And so you have to be really mindful, because there's not a decision that you can make that doesn't negatively impact someone. And then how do you choose, you know, how do you choose who's more important in the moment? And so that's where I've learned why it's important to have great bipartisan relationships. So I try really to be like apolitical and not take a side on things, because you really need both sides. I think that Democrats, they're like penicillin, and Republicans are like vitamin D, you know, in their approach to problem solving. And so if you have you do your conservative approach, take your vitamin D every day, which is really nice until you have a severe infection and now you need penicillin, right? And that's kind of how that works. But if you take penicillin too long, then you kill off all your healthy bacteria. So I think that they both have just, I've watched great leaders on both sides and I've watched their approach, and I've just learned that that who is necessary is important. The timing is important to have everyone at the table, a table being diverse. It just matters. And I'm sorry. I do think that we should expand what we think diversity is, but it is so important to have diverse perspectives at that table to make decisions on behalf of the people at large.
And I think maybe that's why so many are struggling right now, right? Is the seemingly lack of diversity and including people in decision making and conversations politically right now. And I'm just interested in your, I guess, guidance when it comes to, people are really emotionally charged right now, especially if you look on social media, around what's happening to people, right? It's not necessarily policy related, although I'm sure it could be boiled down to that at the end of the day if you work backwards. But it's the lack of compassion for others and what's happening. So when you have people who are that emotionally charged and seeing these things happening to other people, and they have that advocacy mindset, right? And you have the Gretas of the world and passionate about environmentalism, and then everyone else like fighting for human rights. How do you help people have meaningful conversations and are able to check their emotional response to be able to solve problems when it feels so big and it feels like such an attack on human rights?
Oh, I love that question so much. And I spend a lot of time on college campus giving lectures about it. And it kind of goes back to what I was saying about, like, just we're on a truth journey. And truth is made up of pieces. It's not just how you feel, right? And it's also not just facts. And I believe it's divided into, like, fact, feeling, and meaning, right? That logical, emotional, and that spiritual side of things. And so I say, like, you need the feelings. You know, that's an important piece of it. Without emotions, we would think, hey, slavery was efficient, right? Yeah. So you need that. Those are the facts. Slavery was efficient. There's free labor here. You're able to get something built quickly without, you know, yeah, that's a fact. But the feeling is how we decided that there was something wrong with it. And then without, you know, I always hear Ben Shapiro say that facts don't care about your feelings. No, facts do not care about your feelings, but the truth does. And so you need all of those pieces of the puzzle so you can put together a discussion that brings us to a point of truth. Like, we have to define what is the meaning of this now. And if you're not willing to listen to someone's feelings, and then, you know, maybe you can bring them to, like, the fact part of the discussion, but you have to address how they feel. So the way I like to gauge that is, like, where are you on the spectrum? And I think you have to hit all of those points. So if you come up to me saying you're passionate, you're upset, then I need to address you at that level and say, wow, I see you're really upset and you're passionate about this. And it's so important that we have people who are passionate about these issues because it makes the world a better place. You know, the climate is a beautiful space. And then you could throw in some of the facts, you know, and after you have addressed their feelings, now, you know, start to bring to the facts, but not necessarily from a place of disagreement. Do it from a place of agreement and then ask questions to help them better understand how they're feeling, you know, and then we can kind of get to a place of meaning where we define both sides of that discussion based on new information that's been presented. But I just think that we spend too much time, like, if someone's feelings make you uncomfortable, we're always trying to just throw it out with facts. And that's just not the right approach versus listening, because feelings, they do have some facts too. Yeah. They really do. And they come from somewhere. So, you know, take the time to understand it.
Yeah. There's that phrase, what's always legal isn't always moral. And
yes.
I think that's so crucial because when people are emotional about how they feel, you'll always have the ones you want to say, but that's just the law, or that's how this thing is. There's many things are legal, but that doesn't mean it's moral. And right. I love your stance of, like, figure out the emotion, come together for a common goal, and then work backward the facts. I think that's very helpful.
Yeah, I think that sometimes I have to remind people, you know, we get really caught up on freedoms, and freedoms are important. But I tell them that, you know, your constitutional rights, they are there to help protect your right to fight for your freedom. That's where they're there. You may not achieve it, unfortunately. Yeah. But, you know, the right to bear arms, freedom of assembly, freedom of the press, freedom of speech, these are weapons. These are your fighting tools. And so no one has the right to try and disarm someone's right to fight. You know, whatever the outcome is going to be is a different story. But at least in America, we're allowed to fight for it. And the great fight, the best fight, starts with listening and being able to at least, you know, highlight that you see something wrong here, and thank God for the people who are passionate about changing it. I mean, we wouldn't be where we are if it weren't for those people.
I think I want to know when you're going to run for office. When is your next political move happening? When are we putting you on the presidential ballot? That's really what I want to know. I'm sitting here going, yes, I will vote for Tia. Yeah, I'm in my mind making t-shirts. I just think that your messaging is so beautiful and so poignant in today's world, in that we aren't listening to one another. We aren't being compassionate to one another. We're grouping people into blanket groups and not looking at them as humans, you know? And we're real quick, I think, with social media to do that, right? I can't wait to read your book, actually. I would love to read it.
that you do get canceled, right? These really funny creators, and they have, and it has nothing to do with politics. The moment they make their any political view made public, gone, right? Like, it's over. And don't be political. Don't make your stuff about politics. Stop it. You know, we all have opinions and views. You're just not privy to them on this channel all the time as a as a creator, but that doesn't mean that the rest of my humanism stops. I of course I have opinions. I'm not just here to entertain you. And so how do you address that as an expert with people that are in that sphere, in the political, not the non-political, but in the social media world, in how to navigate that? How can we continue to be authentic, show up for ourselves, create things that are true to ourselves, and yet not be part of this cancel culture? Or is this always going to be the way we are until we really address that as a community, as a unit, you know?
Yeah. You know, I think that that's a complex question, because you're going to be, if you are a leader and you have a political stance, you're going to be canceled by someone. The question is who, and what's most important is that you're not being canceled by the people that you, that supported you, right? Right.
You represent. And so,
exactly. And that's why you would have a figure like Donald Trump, who can't really be canceled because he has such a loyal following, and he stays true to his script, and he sticks to his brand, and he sticks to his following. It's not about him being a good person or bad person, but he knows his brand, and he's not talking to anyone else. Getting leaders, especially women, to own that authentic voice, to say, hey, look, you know, we're not going to reach everybody. Everyone isn't going to agree. We can't focus on making everyone happy. We have to talk to who we're talking to, and you're going to have to own that. That's hard. It's especially harder on women, because I think that women get picked on differently than men when it comes to like social media and just in person in general. They're criticized differently, and it really hits them in the heart. You know, I think probably the most important part of my job is being able to help them wipe their tears and hold their hands up and to keep going and pushing forward and having those hard talks to keep them encouraged, you know. But it's those things that matter, is keeping them focused on who their audience is, who they're here to serve, and talking to them specifically and tuning out everyone else. And as a consultant, what me and my team will do is some of our clients sign a contract banning them from social media once we hit a certain point, because it's like, I need you to stay focused. I'll get the comments. I'll take the hits. I'll do that part. And it makes me cry. They're not even talking about me. Oh my gosh. Every election always just drains the life out of me. Just hearing some of the things that people have to say, but it's really important to keep them focused and to keep them confident in what it is they're trying to do for the greater good.
I think that really talks to how empathetic women are. And just wanting to care and love and support. And I do think that's why people feel the way they feel about Donald Trump, is because of the lack of that, right? The lack of empathy, the lack of caring about people. And it's really, really hard. I mean, I don't know if you've ever done this, like scrolled through comments of a video before, and you don't even know this person, but you are crying for them because people are being
horrific.
So mean. And it is just one of the hardest things, I feel like, as a woman to go through it yourself, or to see another woman get teared down like that and bullied or made fun of. And I think when you have any type of figurehead that encourages that type of behavior or that rhetoric or that speech, it can be not just divisive, but sad. Like a sad feeling of, man, we're normalizing something that's going to hurt a lot of people. And that makes it hard to wake up in the morning. So I can't imagine how you feel during election season and reading all these things and having to, you know, manage that, because that emotion is so real and so heavy.
It hurts. It hurts bad. And sometimes I can be downright scared for some of these women who are really putting themselves out there. But it's important that I give a speech called Make Sure Your Sister's in the Room. It's so important that we wrap around women who are willing to lead the way and we continue to feed them words of encouragement. So my call to action to anyone is, if there is a woman that you're a big fan of and you're following her for any reason, she's a CEO or whatever the case may be, please leave encouraging comments for her. It costs absolutely nothing, but she needs to see your support. She really does, because you've no idea the hit she takes in a single day. Please, please, please do that for her.
But that makes me really like heartfelt, sad, yeah, that women that are putting themselves, and maybe you can speak to that. How are they spoken to differently than men on social media? Like, what do you see? I mean, we can say that we are emotional creatures. Women are, right? We cycle. We're living on a 30-day cycle. We are very emotional humans. That's a gift. It's one of our absolute divine gifts, in my opinion.
Strength.
But also makes us more susceptible to these comments in some ways. But I feel like the comments are different. So can you speak to what you see that are different between men and women, what they experience?
Oh, 100%. I mean, and I think that men in those hot seats are just as emotional. They just express it differently, right? You know, yeah, they get to be angry and enraged, and we're more likely to say I'm sad or I'm scared, you know, but nevertheless, we're both still feeling things. But yeah, I think that when the comments that I see where women are hit differently, you know, they're called whores, you know, and they're because they're brilliant, they're smart. Like, you can disagree with her decision, but she has to be a whore, or, you know, you're attacking her the way she looks, or, you know, it's ridiculous. You never see someone criticize a man for looking old, yeah, you know, and that he's aging. Like, okay, yeah, I know that when you voted for him, he wasn't going to grow younger. It's like the most pointless comment in the world to tear a woman down for aging. And I see that, you know, when they have to go, and a lot of, you know, the women I've worked with, they hate to go and do a photo shoot, and they're a nervous wreck about what they should wear, because there's nothing that they're going to be able to put on that someone isn't going to nitpick them to death on. So it's a lot of work to help them to be confident and, still push through. I think that even looking at, when Vice President Harris was running, I wish that they would have put her in those bold feminine colors instead of like putting her in these manly suits that I saw her wearing. She was beautiful nevertheless, and she just looked strong and stunning. But I do, I was like, man, they made so many decisions that I wouldn't have made in that process. I wish they would have allowed her to lean in on her strong feminine nature, because I think they were trying to get away from it. And I think she should have been the stark contrast of her opponent at the time. I think that would have helped her greatly, instead of looking comparable to him. But right, she, you know, she's
competing with him on his turf versus exactly competing in the way her stay strong her suits. Yeah. Yeah,
exactly.
I agree.
Exactly.
I agree.
But that's what's so crazy. Do you think anyone's sitting around having a conversation of, if Donald Trump would have wore something different against Biden? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, that's just
exactly
in and of itself is a great example, right? No one, they don't have to think for 2 seconds.
They don't have to think about it. You know, mm-hmm, the men don't have to think about that. I mean, he's got the world's worst hair.
You know, dude, he's got the worst everything, the worst posture, the way he sits. Like, if somebody was really politically looking at him and being like, dude, you're going to be president, we have to get you to this degree.
Yep.
Everything about him would change. His hair, the color of his skin, the suits, yeah, the way his posture, the way he carries himself, the way he speaks, all of it would have to change. And yeah, the fact that he sits now second time without any of it and is authentically who he is all the time. Yeah. And to your point, on brand, he definitely does not veer from his brand for sure. Isn't it? No. Is definitely a stark contrast from any woman that would try to sit in that seat.
Exactly.
They would have to be meticulously groomed in every corner not to be to even be considered, right? To even be like
even be
a possibility. Yeah. Yeah.
And we even saw this with Hillary, right? Like, her emails, but yet literally, you know, Trump and his pals are out here sending war tech group texts to reporters on accident, and everyone's just like, well, yeah, it happened. And then suddenly no one talks about it again. You know, I just think people still talk about Hillary and those damn emails today. Yet we had a major leak in war plans to a reporter, and there was I can't think of a single consequence. And it's due to men versus women and being completely unforgiving of anyone running that is a female.
Yeah. Absolutely. I love your best.
It's always attacked. Our femininity is always attacked. It's always the thing that, you know, is constantly used against us in leadership. And it's our greatest strength. It's what makes us great leaders. It's what makes us compassionate leaders who know how to execute on hard decisions better, in my opinion. Yeah. You know, with more thoughts, because women tend to bring more diverse voices to the table and they tend to lead in packs, which is what I love about working with women. But yeah, that's one of the things that frustrates me the most and why I do my best to wrap around them and give them that boost of confidence. Say, you're doing right thing. Keep going. Keep going.
That's great advice. I love that advice.
Can you share with us again the name of your book, where people can buy that book, and people want to follow you or are interested in your services, where can they find you?
Yes. So you can get my book off my website, tiaramey.com. I do have it available as an audiobook on Audible, and it's available on Amazon. It's called Canceled: Mastering Difficult Conversations in a Modern World. So those are the best sources where you can get it from, but it is definitely everywhere. But I recommend if you just need a quick listen to download the audiobook, it's only about 3 hours.
Nice. Wonderful.
I'm downloading it today. I love Audible. yeah. And then are you doing consulting work currently or no?
I do still consult.
Okay.
Not as much as I used to, but I do.
And that's on your website too. All of your information, yes, is just at your website. Perfect. Well,
yes,
we'll
I do much more teaching, that. Training, classes, workshops, those sort of things.
Perfect. Wonderful. Perfect. And then three women that have inspired you over all these years that you'd like to give a shout out?
I give a big shout out to Senator Michelle Reynolds. She's been a great friend and mentor to me over the years. I give a great shout out to Mayor Jadwin, and she's a phenomenal leader who just does an amazing job of knowing how to just lead with the people in mind, people first, decision maker. And then my mentor in PR is Gail Saunders, who has been a huge advocate for diversity, equity, and inclusion, has taught me a great deal about how to speak up for people in the room and to make sure that you correct things that are not going right, you know, for the sake of good of the order. So
I love that.
Yes.
I love that. Have your voice in these rooms so that somebody's hearing it.
Absolutely.
Perfect.
Well, thank you so much. Is there any last minute things you wanted to share with the listeners? Anything else that you're passionate about that you wanted to talk about?
Well, the last thing is that I have transitioned a lot of my content on YouTube. If someone would love to also check out my YouTube channel, a lot of my content right now is about reinventing yourself and how to have the conversations with yourself you need to have for women who are going through transition, just transitions in life. And we have, I do a women's retreat in the Hocking Hills. It's a beautiful resort called Camp Voice. So if you're interested in being a part of Camp Voice, we have another one coming up in September. So I'll be sure to share that information. Just to give you the time that you need to focus on what that next move needs to look like, you know, and getting clear on who you're becoming in the process. So that's what that's for, is to unapologetically carve out time for yourself and get focused on reinventing yourself.
Love that. Love that. Amazing. And that's coming up in September.
Yes.
Perfect. We'll put all those details in the show notes, everybody. Tia, thank you so much for coming on. We were so impressed by you when you were here with Mayor Jadwin. And even, I mean, I'm ready for you to run for president anytime. So you have my vote. I feel like we need to start now. You know, we need to get on it. I don't know where you're at with it, but, you know, I'm ready. So thank you so much for all of your inspiring words, the beautiful work that you're doing. I think is so incredibly important in today's environment, maybe the most important work is helping us to get back to being unified and not separate. And thank you so much for what you're doing.
Thank you for having me. This was such an honor. I had a great time talking to you both.
Thank you.
Remember, you can give us a like and follow on Instagram and Facebook. We are on YouTube, iHeart, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts.
And if this resonated, please share. Please, please, please share. And like Tia says, send all the love to a woman who's doing the work out there. Yeah. Love you guys.
Love you.